The US military says it's inflicted a six-hour wave of bombings in Iran on Thursday in response to fresh attacks on US military bases in neighbouring Gulf states. In the past few hours, there are reports of US strikes around the Gulf island of Keshem near the Strait of Hormuz, while Iran has accused the US of, quote, a barbaric attack near a children's cancer ward. Meanwhile, neighbouring Kuwait says it's responding to drone attacks from Iran as the Iranian-backed Houthi group in Yemen vows to target Saudi Arabian oil facilities. The latest exchanges prompted a warning from US President Donald Trump that Iran should, quote, behave and return to negotiations as the president prepares to deliver a national address later this morning. Rob Geis-Pinfold is a lecturer of international security at King's College London and a senior non-resident fellow at the Gulf International Forum. I spoke to him a short time ago. Rob, how do you assess the US military campaign as it stands right now?
The US military campaign is a textbook example of a lack of attention to strategy. It's that classic assumption that if you just use shock and awe, if you degrade and destroy as much of the enemy's capabilities and capacities as possible, then all of a sudden a political horizon will manifest and that will be what you wanted. And that's just simply not the case. And this has been proven in intervention after intervention by the US and the Middle East and elsewhere. But they seem to have not learned the lessons of the past, which is why we're now in this situation where actually it's Iran that is setting the scope and contours of the conflict. It's Iran that has been controlling the escalations. So the US is really struggling to respond. We've had 2 months of Iran attacking two Gulf states, Bahrain and Kuwait. The US didn't respond. It is now responding, but then it's risking a further escalation. So it's one of those cases of damned if they do, damned if they don't, unfortunately. The US is very much playing catch-up to Iran because of that lack of a strategy.
Rob, how is Tehran approaching this new phase of the conflict? Are we seeing any changes in Iranian tactics right now?
Well, what's interesting is that during the actual war itself, you saw Iran target the Gulf states. This was something that surprised a lot of people in the Gulf states, given that they didn't want this war. They actually lobbied the US very, very hard against it, and they didn't even let the US, for the most part, use the bases in those Gulf countries to attack Iran. But Iran targeted the Gulf states for two reasons. One was an attempt to restore deterrence, to show to the US and Israel that if you hit us, we can cause a lot of damage. So therefore, it's in your best interest not to hit us. Basically setting the stage, thinking ahead and trying to disincentivize a return to conflict. And the other thing they wanted to do was to cause as much second-order effects as possible, to damage the global economy so that voters throughout the world, but particularly in the US and Europe, really start to question whether this war was a good idea. So that's why they hit the Gulf, and that's why they targeted countries specifically like the UAE, the biggest commercial, logistical, financial hub in the region. Now they've changed. They're still hitting the Gulf states, but they're hitting Bahrain and Kuwait because the strategy is different. They still see the Gulf as the US center of gravity, but they're trying to trap the US in a scenario where the Iranians can escalate, they can do damage, they can show that they're still a force to be reckoned with, they can demonstrate resolve in negotiations, but they're trying to target countries that are significant but not too significant that would mean a US response and escalation was inevitable. So it's still the Gulf that's being hit, but this is part of a different Iranian strategy now.
What do you think, when you're looking at the overall situation at the moment, there is a narrative that Iran is better able to absorb pain militarily and economically. What do you think of that line of thinking?
Iran is absolutely better able to take the pain because, you know, this is what scholars call an asymmetric conflict, where you have one significantly more powerful party, the United States and Israel, and one significantly weaker one, Iran, which would suggest that, you know, the balance of power lies with the US and Iran. However, the dynamic can often be opposite when it comes to resilience and political will here, especially when the weaker party, in this case Iran, feels like this is an existential struggle. Their back is against the wall. Any kind of concession could bring the regime tumbling down. Remember, this is a regime that was facing significant internal criticism and demonstrations against its rule, the continued rule of the Iranian regime, in late December of last year and the early parts of this year. They responded by killing, we still don't know how many, but up to 30,000 of their own people. And that really shows you that this regime really feels like it is on the ropes. But on the other hand, when it's on the ropes, it's more willing to do dangerous things, it's more willing to take risks, and it's also more resilient than parties like the US, for example. And this is the biggest fear from the US's regional allies, that the US will come in, cause a firefight, destabilize the region, and then when President Trump's attention is elsewhere or the US's attention is elsewhere, the US will basically leave its local allies to clean up this gigantic mess. That's why the Gulf states didn't get involved. And that's still very much a pertinent fear that they have, that, you know, the US will basically just pivot to another conflict, leaving them with a very hostile and belligerent Iran on their doorsteps.
How would Donald Trump extricate himself and the United States from this conflict and with something to show for it? Is that possible?
Well, the only way they could do that is with a comprehensive deal. The memorandum of understanding that we had signed recently was not that. The whole point of the MOU was to defer all of the difficult debates and divides between both sides to later, to try and basically move us away from that paradigm of both sides bombing each other to try and set better terms in the talks, to both sides just talking. That has failed. And one of the key sources of that failure was basically kicking those difficult issues down the can, basically kicking them down the line and hoping that they will solve themselves. So what we'd need now would be a comprehensive deal that sees a real shift in Iran's behavior and gives them incentives to change their behavior. The problem here is that because this war was so ill thought out, Iran has come out with something it didn't have before the war, control of the Strait of Hormuz. And that's caused so much of a global economic fallout that Iran is now unwilling to give up the Strait. It feels like it has a card it didn't have previously. So the US is offering sanctions relief and has been offering sanctions relief, but the Iranians are saying, you know, we'll take the sanctions relief, but we'd much rather have control over the Strait of Hormuz. Whereas the Americans are saying, first things first, give up the Strait of Hormuz, then we'll talk about the sanctions relief. So both sides are so far apart right now, it's very, very difficult for us to get to a comprehensive deal. And that's talking about things like sanctions relief and the Strait of Hormuz. We've not discussed, and both parties haven't seemed to have discussed yet, some of the more systemic issues like Iran's support for proxies in the region and, of course, its nuclear program. So this, the divides between both sides seem to be getting bigger and bigger every day.
Rob, really good to talk to you this morning. Thank you very much for your perspective.
Pleasure.